In a painted logo, a woman stands on a tiered pedestal. Wearing a Roman toga, she holds a torch aloft. Its brilliant light shimmers against a silver word, Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment company. Columbia Pictures presents An Easy There Tiger, Amy Robinson production, a Lawrence Mark production, a film by Nora Ephron. Now, a crane lowers a blue mid-century station wagon with wooden paneling onto a dock. Beside the descending car sit piles of trunks and wrapped parcels, stacked like bales of hay. Two workers load the trunk of the station wagon. Words appear. France, 1949. A worker closes the rear hatch of the car and pats the windshield. The car drives off.
Repeat after me, okay? Nous cherchons un bon restaurant français.
Nous cherchons un bon restaurant français.
Quelque chose typique et charmant.
Quelque chose typique et charmant.
Typique et charmant.
Meryl Streep, Amy Adams.
Typique et charmant. Oh, Pauline Milon.
On a country road, a sign reads, Rouen, 26 kilometers. As the car pulls into a town with wide stone buildings, a title appears, Julie and Julia, based on two true stories. A sturdy woman in white gloves and a smart skirt suit climbs out of the car and smiles at the bespectacled driver.
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Stanley Tucci, Chris Messina. At a restaurant, a bow-tied waiter brings a pan to the table and tilts it down.
La saumonière, madame.
The woman stares at it dreamily.
Butter.
The waiter expertly separates the fish from its delicate bones. The woman forks a piece of the thin filet from her plate.
Oh, my goodness. You have to taste this.
Shaking her head, she cuts her fish.
Yeah.
She gingerly raises a forkful to Paul. He leans his bald head closer and takes a bite. Chewing thoughtfully, he closes his eyes.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I know.
Paul pats Julia's arm. Now in Paris, they drive over the Seine River. Linda Amon, Marilyn Rashkov.
Look at that! Oh, God. Paul, so beautiful!
The Eiffel Tower juts into the sky behind stately plaster and stone residences. The station wagon speeds into a neighborhood.
Slow down.
Two pedestrians scurry out of the way. Jane Lynch, Frances Sternhagen, Helen Carey, Deborah Rush, Joan Juliet Buck, Vanessa Ferlito, Casey Wilson, Jillian Bach.
This is it. Good, right? Just stop.
The car halts in front of an ivy-covered building.
No, I can't believe we get to live here.
Julia steps out of the driver's seat and views the residence. A concierge opens double doors to a courtyard.
Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour.
Comment allez-vous? Je suis Julia Child. Enchantée.
Now a woman packs an original copy of Mastering the Art of French Cooking into a box with more cookbooks, then thrusts it into a packed Jeep. Queens, New York, 2002. She rides in the Jeep next to a dark-haired man.
Is this a mistake? Should we have stayed in Brooklyn?
We're gonna love Queens. Queens is beautiful.
The young woman glances at her companion and with a grin shakes her head of short red hair. Casting by Francine Maisler, CSA, Kathy Driscoll Moeller. The Jeep drives past a tall, decrepit warehouse and a water tower covered in graffiti. Costume designer Anne Roth. The Jeep pulls up to a small two-story brick building. A red and white checkered awning on the first floor's pizzeria shades the storefront. Music by Alexandre Desplat. The redhead trudges up the stairs to the vacant second floor apartment, toting a cat carrier. She sets it down and opens its door. A ginger tabby steps out. Editor, Richard Marks, ACE. Production designer, Mark Ricker. As the woman roams the empty apartment, the dark-haired man climbs the stairs with a box.
Moving trucks here.
Later, the redhead unpacks items from boxes while the dark-haired man goofs around in the half-settled bedroom. He finds the redhead squatting in the kitchen.
You okay?
Everything is falling down.
Hey.
What are we doing here?
Repeat after me. 900 square feet.
The redhead gives a resigned nod.
900 square feet.
She looks at her beau.
Plus it's close to your office.
Plus it's close to my office, but we don't have to move. We could renege on the lease, repack everything, and live in the Jeep.
They sit side by side on the kitchen floor.
You're right. Eric, what is that noise?
What noise?
The redhead faces Eric somberly.
Is it going to be like this every night?
Eric presses his lips to her cheek.
Maybe.
Back in Paris, Julia roams their elegant apartment, fanning herself. Oh!
Jewel?
Paul enters carrying a large wicker basket.
It's Versailles!
So happy you like it, darling.
Julia opens French doors to a faux balcony, closing her eyes as a breeze wafts through her curly hair. She smiles, takes in a savoring breath, then inspects the rest of the apartment. Director of Photography, Stephen Goldblatt, ASC, BSC. Executive Producer, Scott Rudin. Executive Producers, Donald J. Lee Jr., Dana Stevens. Based on the book, Julie and Julia by Julie Powell. And based on the book, My Life in France by Julia Child with Alex Prudhomme. Julia lies on the bed. Her feet hang off the end. She glances at them, dangling over the mattress. Now, in Queens, a burly man opens the storefront of the pizzeria. The redhead with a short, shaggy haircut exits from a door beside the pizza parlor. She smacks a plastic bag as it blows by. Later, Manhattan skyscrapers rise into the sky beyond an old, cursive Pepsi-Cola sign. The former Brooklyner walks past it. Produced by Lawrence Mark, Nora Ephron. Produced by Amy Robinson, Eric Steele. Screenplay by Nora Ephron. Directed by Nora Ephron. Later, she emerges from a subway station. As she passes Ground Zero, she glances at people gathered by a fence adorned with flowers and flags. Now, she sits in a cluttered cubicle surrounded by other workers wearing headsets.
Good morning, Lower Manhattan Development Corporation.
LMDC.
Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, Julie Powell.
My son died in the second tower.
I'm sorry.
Julie closes her eyes.
I'm so sorry.
Are you the person to speak to if I don't like the plan for the memorial that was in this morning's Times?
You can speak to me.
Do you have any power?
No.
I want to speak to someone with power. I don't like the plan.
I don't like the plan either.
Julie answers numerous calls.
You people are a bunch of heartless bureaucratic goons.
I am not a heartless bureaucratic goon. I am just a person in a cubicle, and I am doing the best I can, ma'am.
This is my sixth phone call, and the only thing anyone ever tells me is I have to fill out a form to get in line for an insurance payment.
And you do. But, I mean, if you don't want to fill out a form, I will fill one out for you, but you're still going to have to come in and sign it.
To your cubicle?
Yes. I feel terrible about what you're going through, Mr. Diamond, but...
And you have no idea what I'm going
through,
Ms. Powell. You have no
please.
Idea.
Don't yell at me.
Instructions on a cubicle
please
wall read, do not become emotionally involved. Now Julie listens tearfully.
And now the doctor says there's fiberglass in his lungs. He coughs. He never stops coughing.
Later, Julie talks to her boss.
His wife says there's so much crap in his lungs he can't breathe, and now his insurance is refusing to pay for this drug that might really work.
Tell her to call the health department.
That's an answering machine.
Andrea Gomez, in the mayor's office.
Thank you. Thank you.
Julie smiles gratefully and leaves. Now, amid the flow of pedestrians on the sidewalk, she strides along with a downhearted look. She stops at a shop window displaying a chocolate fountain.
Chocolate cream pie.
Later, at the apartment, she stirs a bowl of chocolate filling.
You know what I love about cooking?
What's that?
I love that after a day when nothing is sure, and when I say nothing, I mean nothing. You can come home and absolutely know that if you add egg yolks to chocolate and sugar and milk, it will get thick. It's such a comfort.
Eric tastes the filling.
Bad day?
Mm.
Mm. When will this pie be ready?
Soon, but I have to make the whipped cream first and let it set.
I'll be here. It's a masterpiece. Mm.
As Eric tastes more, Julie sips a cocktail.
Ritual Cobb salad lunch tomorrow. Dreading.
Daytime. Julie rushes into a Tony Bistro and greets a table of three smartly dressed women, one of whom talks on her cell phone.
Hi. Oh, what can I get for you, ladies?
I will have a Cobb salad, no blue cheese.
Cobb salad, no beets.
Mm-hmm. Cobb salad, no bacon.
Cobb salad, no eggs.
Okay, tell them. Are you listening carefully, Tracy? Tell them to take the offer up to 185. Repeat after me,
here
Tracy. 185. And call me the second you hear back.
The high-nosed brunette hangs up.
My assistant, it's almost not worth having one.
I know.
Really?
I know. Yesterday I said to Allison, go to the pharmacy, get me a pair of black pantyhose. She came back and said they didn't have any. I said, did you try another pharmacy? I mean, really?
Or Bloomingdale's.
What's wrong with trying Bloomingdale's?
Yes.
I don't get. If only I could be my own assistant.
You can be.
The women gawk.
Fire your assistant and don't hire a replacement.
No, that's not what I mean, Julie. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
The snooty brunette answers her cell phone.
Oh, those are cute.
Hello, Tracy. Okay, tell them 190. 190. Great.
190? What? What are you up to?
$190 million. We're assembling a parcel at Midtown.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yes.
Oh, that is so great, Bank. Cassie.
Bank.
A parcel of what?
Cassie smiles knowingly.
Buildings. We're going to tear them all down and put up a high rise.
To your parcel.
Thank you.
Oh, salute.
The women clink their water glasses.
And enough about you. Here's to me. As of yesterday, I am the senior vice president in charge of corporate publicity.
No.
Which means I get a raise, and I can borrow $500,000 at 2% if I want to.
A raise.
If you want to.
So how's your job, Julie?
Oh, it's,
I can only imagine. Heartbreaking.
So sad.
Painful.
Not in a bad way.
Excuse me. Oh, God, I forgot. Ooh,
as two of the women take calls, the red-haired friend faces Julie.
Hi.
Hey, Jules. I have got to interview you for this piece that I'm writing.
Sure, Annabelle, great. I'd be honored.
Annabelle talks into a recorder.
Called Julie about interview.
Find out about
I don't know.
As Annabelle talks into her handheld recorder, Julie nibbles a pencil-thin breadstick. Cassie takes it away. No. Julie turns back to Annabelle, who checks her date book.
What is it about? The article.
It's about our generation turning 30. His people turning 30.
Oh, my life. I am so busy. Don't know when I can fit you in.
May I remind you, I don't want to see you. You want to see me.
Yeah.
Would a breakfast work?
Now, a poster shows Julie, three others, and the title, Portrait of a Lost Generation.
I believed her. What kind of idiot am I? She said, it's about our generation turning 30.
What'd you expect? Annabelle was always a liar.
Julie Powell, once the editor of the Amherst Literary Magazine, the one we all knew would be the one, temped for 8 years before giving up on her novel, and now works in a cubicle as a mid-level bureaucrat attempting to deal with the after effects of 9/11.
Her mousy bohemian friend grimaces.
God, you memorized it? How pathetic.
She left so much out.
Julie's friend looks away.
Anyway, the picture was good.
I looked fat.
Just your face.
Julie gives an amused smirk. Later at home, she flips bread in a skillet, then slices tomatoes.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Do you know what Annabelle's doing now? Sarah told me, a blog.
Of what?
What do you mean, of what? A blog of Annabelle. Of every thought that passes through her brain, her stupid, vapid, insipid.
She points her knife at Eric, who reads on the couch.
I could write a blog. I have thoughts.
And you're a writer, which is more than I can say for Annabelle.
If only that were true.
You wrote a novel.
Have a novel. And no one wanted to publish it. You're not a writer unless someone publishes you.
See, that's what's so great about blogs. You don't have to be published. You can just go online, press enter, and there it is, out there.
What would I write a blog about? You're an editor. Tell me.
Why don't you write about how much you love Queens?
Julie raises her brow and smiles.
A short blog?
They eat Parmesan-sprinkled bruschetta.
Nicole, write about your job.
If I wrote a blog about my job and anyone at work ever read it, I mean, hello.
This is good.
Mm-hmm.
This is really
on top
good.
Of which, the whole idea of writing a blog is to get away from what I do all day. The way that cooking is a way that I get away from what I do all day.
So, write a blog about cooking.
Julie gives Eric a forlorn look.
I'm not a real cook like Julia Child or Mario Batali.
Julia Child wasn't always Julia Child.
They sip red wine. Julie shifts her eyes thoughtfully as she forks up a piece of sausage.
If I really wanted to learn to cook, I could just cook my way through Julia Child's cookbook. I could blog about that. I have a copy. I stole it from my mother last time I was in Texas.
Eric grins, his mouth full of food.
When I was 8, my father's boss came to dinner and it was a really big deal. And my mother made bouff bourguignon. But it wasn't just bouff bourguignon. It was Julia's bouff bourguignon. And it was like she was there, like Julia was there in the room on our side, like some great, big, good fairy. And everything was going to be all right.
Eric gazes at Julie's delighted face. Now they watch Julia on TV.
I'm going to try to flip this thing over now, which is a rather daring thing to do.
She changed everything. Before her, it was frozen food and can openers and marshmallows.
Don't knock marshmallows.
Julia Child holds a pan.
When you flip anything, you've just got to have the courage of your convictions, especially if it's a loose sort of mass.
Her flip misses.
That didn't go very well. But you see, when I flipped it, I didn't have the
She's
courage.
She's so adorable.
I needed to, the way I should have.
Julia returns fallen bits to the
but
pan.
You can always put it together. And you alone in the kitchen, who's to see?
But pearls. The woman is wearing pearls in the kitchen.
I've just got to practice like the piano. I'm Julia Child. Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Julie grins and Eric kisses her on the cheek.
Julia Child is co-author of the book Mastering the Art of French Cooking.
As credits cycle on the black and white show, Eric and Julie smooch. Julie reclines on the couch and Eric lovingly climbs on top of her.
Bon appétit.
Later, Julie sits in bed reading Julia's cookbook.
For the servantless American cook, that's me, all right.
She flips the page and sets the book down. Eric shakes a Tums into his hand.
Okay, here's a problem. I've never eaten an egg.
And I have a hyperacidic stomach. We'll deal.
He climbs into bed.
So, I'll cook my way through the Julia Child cookbook and write a blog about it. But I'll probably need a deadline.
Why?
Because otherwise it'll be like everything else I do. Let's face it, I never finish anything.
Hey.
Well, it's true. You know why I think it is? ADD.
You have ADD?
Yes. That's why I'm so bad at housework.
Oh, is that it?
I'm just saying a deadline would be good.
So a deadline. I love deadlines. I love the sound they make as they go whooshing past. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I mean it.
Okay, so a year or so.
A year? This thing weighs like 2 pounds. I have a full-time job. Sometimes I don't get home until 8 or 9 o'clock, and it's crazy. It's crazy. Is it crazy?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, you want to do Blog C?
Yes.
Blog C it is.
Morning. Julie and Eric face a laptop.
Nobody here?
Her blog is titled The Julie Julia Project.
But Servantless American Cooks.
Servantless American Cooks.
What do you think?
Love it.
A new window appears.
Start blogging.
Later, Julie types.
The Julie/Julia Project. The book. Mastering the Art of French Cooking. First edition, 1961, by Simone Beck, Louisette Bertholle, and, of course, Julia Child. The woman who taught America to cook and to eat. It's 40 years later, and no one can touch her. The challenge? 365 days, 524 recipes. The contender, Julie Powell. Government employee by day, renegade foodie by night, risking her marriage, her job, and her cat's well-being, she has signed on for a deranged assignment. How far it will go, no one can say.
In a countdown field, Julie enters 365 days to go and 524 recipes to go. In Paris, Julia visits an outdoor market. Baguettes jut from her shopping basket. As Julia passes two butchers, one holds up a hare, still with its fur. The aspiring cook grimaces, then meets a greengrocer.
Dear Charlie, we're settled in finally, and Julia loves it here. She wants to stay forever.
Now she buys nuts.
You know how famously grouchy the French can be, dear brother.
It's so delightful.
Paul snaps her photo, now with an oyster man.
But Julia brings out the best in a polecat.
So charming.
So she thinks they're the most wonderful people in the world.
Now the child strolled through a park.
I feel that I am French. I just must be.
Well, you might be.
They pass a baby carriage and Julia's smile fades.
As for staying here forever, I have to say, I wouldn't mind it myself.
Now at a photography exhibit.
Thanks for coming.
Paul, congratulations.
Excellent exhibit.
Thanks so much, Jack. Jack Donovan, this is my wife, Julia.
Now at a restaurant.
It was such a wonderful exhibition, Paul. Oh,
thank you.
It really... I am so proud.
A waiter brings food.
Oh, good.
French people eat French food. Every single day I can't get over it.
They do.
As Julia puts out a cigarette, Paul steals a bite from her plate.
Oh, you know, I love you so much. I'm going to let you take the first bite.
So good.
Right? It's good.
Julia refrains from digging in and faces Paul.
What should I do, do you think?
About what?
I don't really want to go back into government work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but shouldn't I find something to do?
She shifts her restless gaze.
Wives don't do anything here. That's not me. This is not me.
I know.
I saw a notice on the bulletin board at the embassy for hat-making lessons.
Paul stares wide-eyed at her. He shifts his gaze, then nods.
You like hats?
I do. I do.
Her husband eyes her with an affectionate smirk.
What is it that you really like to do?
Eat. I like to do.
I know. And we are so good at it. Look at you. Now, how
growing
good you are.
In front of you.
Now, in a millinery workshop, Julia sits before an unadorned hat on a stand, her expression listless. She picks up a ribbon and pulls one end through the other with a dissatisfied pout. Later, on a park bench.
I was thinking of taking bridge lessons.
You like bridge?
I do. I like the idea of bridge.
4 points for an ace.
In a bridge class, Julia stares out a window.
2 points for a queen, 1 point for a jack. And breast your cards.
Now at a bookstore.
Do you have any French cookbooks in English?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, gosh.
Now with a tutor.
J'ai essayé d'acheter un livre de cuisine français.
Française.
In English, mais... The salesperson,
vendeuse,
had no idea. Because, you see, there is no French cookbook in English. And all I have is The Joy of Cooking by Irma Rombaugh, which is an excellent, excellent cookbook, but it's not French. So I did ask my friend Avis Devoto to look around in the United States.
Madame.
If she could find...
En français, je vous prie, en français.
Right. Right. Gosh, I thought I was... speaking French to you.
No. Malheureusement.
Dommage.
Now, at a restaurant, Julia sits at the head of a long, crowded table. Paul presents her with a gift.
Oh, my goodness!
What do we have here? She unwraps it, revealing a thick book.
My memoirs.
She turns it, showing the title. La Russe Gastronomique.
It's in French.
You'll get there. You'll get
Julia kisses Paul.
I'm learning. I'm trying.
A waiter brings a pastry with a candle. She blows out the flame. Later, in bed, she leafs through the book. Photos show poultry being prepared.
What can this mean?
What?
Beignet the cuisse.
This.
Wash the thighs.
No, bathe.
Oh, bathe.
Bathe the thighs.
Look, but then... En beurre, in butter, I know that.
Uh-huh. Bathe the thighs in butter.
And then, what is that?
And then, stuff the, what's
poulet,
that word?
Poulet, the hen.
Right, hen.
Mm-hmm.
Until she just can't take it anymore.
It doesn't say that.
It does. I'll show you later in the dictionary. I'll go through the whole recipe with you.
Setting the book aside, Paul kisses her.
Why don't I go to cooking school?
Why don't you?
I'm serious.
So am I.
Paul nibbles her neck, then pulls her in for another passionate kiss. Julia strokes his stomach, then eyes him adoringly as he removes his glasses.
What if you hadn't fallen in love with me?
But I did.
Their embrace grows more intense, and they lie back together. Paul switches off his bedside lamp.
Oh, gosh.
Julia switches off her lamp, and Paul tenderly rolls on top of her. Now an alarm clock reads 5:30. Julie rises, then types at her laptop.
Yesterday was Tuesday, August 13th, 2002. Day one. 364 days to go.
Now she chops off an artichoke stem.
I cooked artichokes with hollandaise sauce, which is melted butter that's been whipped into a frenzy with egg yolks until it's died and gone to heaven.
She whips the sauce.
And let me say this. Is there anything better than butter? Think it over. Every time you taste something that's delicious beyond imagining, and you say, what is in this? The answer is always going to be butter.
It's incredible.
She and Eric eat.
It's been whisked into submission, that's why. The day there's a meteorite heading toward the Earth, and we have 30 days to live, I am going to spend it eating butter.
5 pounds of it sit in her fridge.
Here's my final word on the subject.
She melts a chunk in her pan.
You can never have too much butter.
She adds two more. Now she sautés mushrooms.
August 24th, day 11.
Is this what you mean when you say don't crowd the mushrooms? Is this a
353 days to go. A horrible day at work. An old grandma who looked as if she wouldn't harm a fly called me a pencil-pushing capitalist dupe. But then I came home and cooked chicken with cream, mushrooms, and port, and it was total bliss. Here's the big news. I had been cooking mushrooms the wrong way my entire life. Don't crowd the mushrooms, otherwise they won't brown.
Her words type out.
Are you listening? Whoever you are.
Now she buys cheese.
You're gonna love that one.
Day 22.
This one's really good with fig jam.
I got carried away in Dean and DeLuca last night and spent half my take-home pay. And the first thing I realized when I got to the subway with my groceries, a bag of cat litter, a bottle of olive oil I absolutely could not live without, and a huge bunch of branches, was that the branches were probably not a good idea.
She descends subway stairs.
They were slapping folks in the face right and left, and I was sweating like a pig. Not surprising, since I've been way too busy cooking fattening food to bother exercising. And then I came home and got a big vote of confidence from my mother.
Remind me again why you're doing this,
blog.
Whatever it's called.
Julie cooks while on the phone.
It's a regimen, Mom, like doing sit-ups.
Well, it's just adding pressure.
What pressure?
You have a full-time job, you have a husband, and now you're gonna get sick from blocking.
It's sort of like being in AA.
What are you saying?
It gives you something you have to do every day, one day at a time.
How do you know this lingo? Honey, are you an alcoholic?
I'm saying it's good for me to have short-term goals.
Well, that is silly. That is just plain silly. Who's reading this blog?
People. People are reading it, I'm sure.
Well, it's something you decided to do, and you can decide not to, and not one single person's gonna mind.
No, don't you get it? I just started. I can't stop. I have to finish. It's all I've got. Hello? Hello? Stupid dead phone.
Hey, it's not all you got.
I know. I didn't mean that.
She returns to the kitchen. Now she types.
Yesterday, I poached an egg. It seemed like the perfect thing to do on perhaps the second worst workday in recorded history.
Explain to me how you've never eaten an egg in your whole life.
I've had eggs in, like, cakes.
Sarah stares.
Never had an egg. I was a very willful child.
A pot steams.
It's simmering. I had this notion, God knows why, that poaching eggs would be simple.
She cracks an egg into the water.
But I was deeply wrong.
Gently push the white over the yolk with a wooden spoon for 2 to 3 seconds. Immediately.
With a wooden spoon, Julie prods the egg. It disintegrates into filmy strands.
Ew. Disgusting.
Oh, maybe the eggs aren't fresh. Julia says the eggs have to be fresh.
They are fresh.
Okay, you don't have to bite my head off. I'm just quoting Julia.
It took three of us crammed into the kitchen over a pot of simmering water, but eventually, we nailed it.
Hello.
Welcome.
How cute is that?
Julie tries a bite.
And I ate my very first egg of my whole life, ever, ever, ever. I thought eggs were going to be greasy and slimy, but it tastes like cheese sauce. Yum.
She raises her glass.
Julia, child, you are so good.
Mm-hmm. Cheers.
Cheers. And may I say, excellent wine?
Mm-hmm. Do you think Julia knows about you?
I wish. I have this fantasy that she comes for dinner and I show her my new lemon zester. We become very close.
She eats another bite of egg.
The truth is, no one knows about me. I feel like I'm just sending things into this giant void.
Which reminds me, Annabelle's blog. Have you read it lately?
Yes. It's sort of funny.
Is it?
She's dating this rich guy who owns a plane. His name's Lester. And they do it.
Sarah points upward.
In the air. People love it. Huge hit.
What do you think it means if you don't like your friends?
It's completely normal.
Men like their friends.
We're not talking about men. Who's talking about men?
Daytime.
So it's 5 weeks down, 47 to go, and I feel fantastic.
Julie blogs at work.
Sometimes I can't help but wonder, is there anyone out there reading me? But I'm sure you are, aren't you? Somebody? Anybody?
A comment window appears.
Ernestine, I have a comment.
Her coworker grins. The comment reads, Julie, it's your mother. I still don't understand why you're doing this. I seem to be your only reader.
My mother doesn't count.
At Le Cordon Bleu in Paris, Julia and two other women face a teacher.
Today, we will begin by learning to boil eggs. First, you must make sure that the egg is fresh.
Now, in an office.
I was so hoping that, for something a little more advanced, Madame Brassard.
But you are not an advanced cook.
But I do know how to boil an egg.
Do you know how to bone a duck?
No, but that's exactly the sort of thing that I'm very interested in learning how to do.
Madame Brassard shakes her head.
Ah, there is one other class, but you will not like it. It's for professional, which you will never be, I'm sure. All men, all GIs, and very expensive. I cannot imagine that you would ever want to pay the tuition.
How much?
Now, a classroom door opens. Wandering in, Julia beams excitedly. A chef with a snowy mustache looks up, and his male students turn.
Bonjour!
Bonjour, madame.
Later, we move down a long table, watching masculine hands rapidly chop onions. Julia's hands tentatively saw with her knife into an onion. Her classmates stare, and the chef approaches. Julia notices the others watching.
Madame, s'il vous plaît, laissez-moi. You must hold the knife first of all, like this. Really, see, leave the thumb here. And là, the hand and the knife are one. And the hand, the other hand, you must protect it. You must cut only the onion. Yes?
Not me.
Yes. And then you put your thumb here and the other fingers here.
Oui.
Later, at home, Julia practices chopping. A mound of chopped onions 2 feet across sits on the wooden tabletop. Paul appears in the doorway, recoils, and rubs his eyes.
Joel?
Oh?
You're being a little over-competitive, don't you think?
Well, you should have seen the way those men looked at me. As if I was some frivolous housewife just looking for a way to kill time.
Well,
with an amused smile, Paul shakes his head and leaves.
Where are you going?
Well, I'm not here.
You hungry?
No.
Good.
She resumes practicing. Now, in class, she finishes chopping first.
Ta-da!
Later, she and her classmates each melt butter in a pan. Julia adds beaten eggs and shakes her pan back and forth over a gas flame. Her fellow students add their eggs, too. Madame Brassard enters, folds her arms, and watches Julia with a sour glare. Straightening, the aspiring chef lifts her pan. She gives it a small upward jerk and flips the omelet.
Well done, Madame Shield.
Madame Brassard leaves with an indignant huff.
Dear Avis, I'm in my third week at Le Cordon Bleu, and I'm in utter bliss. Every morning the alarm goes off at 6:30 and I leap out of bed. By 7:30 I'm in class, in my apron, peeling potatoes. And then we cook stock, and we bone fish, we dress pigeons, we make pastry with so much butter it almost stops your heart just to look at it. My teacher moves so quickly, I'm sometimes lost. But I'm way ahead of the others in the class, all of them men, and all of them very unfriendly until they discovered I was fearless. Something I realized about the same time they did.
She bisects a lobster's head.
Morning class ends at 12:30.
What?
And I go home and make lunch for Paul.
Paul pulls her onto his lap and kisses her. He takes her into the bedroom.
Then Paul takes a nap.
As they embrace, she yanks down his suspenders.
And later in the afternoon, he goes back to the embassy and I go back to school.
In class, the master chef paces.
Must have a mortar and pestle.
Incidentally, my father is horrified I'm going to cooking school. Offered to give me extra money to hire a cook.
Don't worry. Go on. Fun. Joy. This is what...
Now at a fishmonger's.
I'm probably the only American I know in Paris who thinks shopping for food is as much fun as buying a dress. Of course, you'd think so, too, if you lived in a country where absolutely nothing comes in my size.
She browses pastries, then tastes a pear.
By the way, did you know that if you don't dry meat, it won't brown properly? Irma Rombauer doesn't say a word about it in The Joy of Cooking.
At home, she types.
Avis, I am in heaven here. I've been looking for a career all my life.
Happy Valentine's
and
Day.
And I found it.
Paul brings a mortar and pestle, now at a dinner party.
We met in Ceylon when we were in the OSS.
But he never noticed me at first.
Well, that's not true. I noticed you. I noticed your legs straight up.
Oh, you were such a roué. All the women were mad for him.
Can you blame them?
Everyone wears a paper
anyway,
heart badge.
We were sent off to China.
Absolutely delicious, if I do say so myself.
Julia. When you finish your term, you'll be teaching at Cordon Bleu.
No, I don't think so. The woman who runs it absolutely hates me.
Oh, no one could possibly hate you.
That's true, but she does.
Were you spies?
Paul sits at the head of the table.
No. Yes. No.
You were in the Office of Strategic Services and you were not spies?
I was only a file clerk. But Paul designed all of the secret war rooms for General Mountbatten.
Well, just maps and exhibits and things. It wasn't...
He did! He really? Single-handedly won the war.
Well, I had to. Someone did.
Yeah,
I mean, it was dragging on, wasn't it? Anyway, so there we were in China, just friends, having dinner. And it turned out to be Julia.
Julia's merry smile fades.
It turned out to be Julia all along.
Paul holds her in a loving gaze. Her chest heaves and she beams radiantly.
Julia, you are the butter to my bread and the breath to my life. I love you, darling girl.
Julia slips a hand beneath her paper heart.
Happy Valentine's Day.
She flutters it. Now Paul watches her cooking. She towers over their French kitchen.
Dear Charlie, Julia in front of her stove has the same fascination for me as watching a kettle drummer at the symphony.
She whacks hanging pots.
The oven door opens and shuts so fast, you hardly notice the deft thrust of a spoon as she dips into a casserole. And up to her mouth for a taste check like a perfectly timed double beat on the drums. Then, with her bare fingers, she snatches a set of cannelloni out of the pot of boiling water.
Whoa!
And she cries, these damn things
damn
are
things
as hot as a
stiff cock!
Now in Queens.
She said what?
I know.
Julia Child said hot as a...
I know, I'm shocked. It's from a letter that Paul Child wrote to his twin brother Charlie in 1949. When Julia was just starting classes at Le Cordon Bleu.
So Julia and Paul. Beaucoup.
Wow. Just goes to show you.
They open mail.
You can never tell about a person's sex life by looking at them. They were so in love.
Julie opens a padded envelope which contains a small bottle and a note.
Hot sauce from a reader. And today I had 12 comments from readers and I didn't know any of them.
Now Julie receives more food items.
Thanks to all my faithful readers for this loot. I have now completed 65 recipes in 47 days.
She types.
59 days down, 437 recipes to go.
Julie blows her nose.
on track with 103 recipes in just over 2 months.
She takes out a souffle.
Lobster Thermidor is coming up, and I am going to have to murder and dismember a crustacean. How will I ever do this? Last night, our sleep machine, the one we have by our bed to drown out the noise of freight trucks rumbling past our apartment, was speaking to me, and it was saying, "Lobster killer, lobster killer, lobster killer, lobster killer." Ugh.
At a fish market.
One of my readers said that if you put lobsters in the freezer, it sort of numbs them.
An employee takes a live lobster from a tank and bags it. Julie and Eric swap a look, now in the Jeep.
Then I got another comment that said, "Man up, kill the damn lobster. Just take a knife and do it."
Behind them, the plastic bag ruffles as a lobster crawls around. Eric glances at Julie. Julie unbuckles her seatbelt and checks the bag. The lobster looks at her.
Oh, God.
She sits down, now at home.
Note on dealing with live lobsters. If you object to steaming a live lobster, yes, plunge the point of the knife into the head between the eyes. Oh, Julia, you make it sound so simple. Lobster killer. Eric. Get out of here!
She snaps tongs at him.
You at all! You are completely useless! I'm just gonna throw them into the water and put the lid on, and that will be that.
She dons a rubber glove, removes the lid from a pot of boiling water, and takes a lobster out of the bag.
Hello.
She faces the pot.
Goodbye.
She stuffs the lobster in, then grabs another.
I'm sorry.
She stuffs a second lobster in the pot and returns to the bag for a third.
I'm sorry.
She sticks the third in the pot, flips a stray antenna off the brim, and puts the lid back on. Standing over the closed pot with all the lobsters inside, Julie smiles proudly. The lid pops into the air, and Julie runs out of the kitchen. Eric hops up as Julie flails her arms and clutches her head. Eric grabs the hot lid from the floor and covers the pot.
Okay, all right. All right, boys. There's a new sheriff in town.
Julie lets go of her head and looks over.
Lobster killer. Lobster killer.
As she cautiously approaches the kitchen, Eric grabs an apple and takes a bite.
Under control.
You are a saint. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
She kisses him.
Thank you. You're welcome.
He kisses her hungrily.
I can't. I can't. I have a lot to do. Eric, I can't.
Give me a moment.
Eric, fine. Go. I have so much to do. Get out.
She shoves him out of the kitchen. Julie jumps. Later, Eric greets arriving guests. One guy hands off a cake. He and Eric hug.
Cake.
Dressed like Julia Child, Julie puts her hands on her hips and faces her guests.
Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Julie models her 50s-era look, then hugs her friends.
Happy birthday, sweetheart. Oh, thanks for coming all out here.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, and that's for everyone.
Later, over dinner.
Here's an incredible thing. When Julia and Paul met, she was a virgin.
Really?
Wow.
She was, like, practically 40.
You serious?
How does anyone even know that?
There were all these letters that Julia wrote to her friend, Avis DeVoto. And Paul wrote to his brother, and no one threw anything out, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Wow.
When they got married, she could barely boil an egg. Isn't that amazing?
Really?
Julie holds up her fork.
Braised cucumbers are a revelation. I'm obsessed with her. I'm totally obsessed.
She's totally obsessed. Well, it's good that you are, because this is amazing. Seriously. So good.
Well, savor it, because that's all there is. I mean, lobster. Major bucks.
Why don't you put a PayPal thing on the website? People could send in money if they felt like it. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You have fans. Your readers love you.
I do. I have fans.
Yeah, you do.
Well, I can't ask them for money.
Why not?
I think you should do the PayPal thing. That way we could have more lobster.
Later, Julie blows out candles.
Harder! Get him! Get him!
They serve the birthday cake. Now Eric hands Julie a gift.
Happy birthday, sweetheart.
Julie takes the present and looks Eric in the eyes.
Thank you.
She tears off the wrapping paper to find a thin box. Opening it, Julie grins at Eric, then reveals a pearl necklace.
just like Julia's.
Aww.
Only hers were probably the real deal.
They're beautiful.
Eric sets down his cup of coffee and goes behind her.
Let's give this a shot here.
As he wraps the necklace around her neck, Julie snaps off the fake plasticky pearls she's wearing. She feels her new pearls and smiles. Eric sits by her.
I'm 30. I thought it was going to be terrible, but thanks to you and thanks to Julia, it feels like I'm going to get through.
Misty-eyed, Julie grins, then waves her hands.
Cake.
More cake.
How do you like that cake?
Later, still in her Julia getup, Julie sleeps on the couch. Eric enters and leans over her.
Hey, you. I'm going to bed.
He turns off a lamp and leaves her sleeping peacefully. Now at work, Julie glances over her cubicle to a coworker.
Ernie, 53 comments on my lobster blog.
Shut up. Mm-hmm.
They playfully slap hands, then sit back down.
Julie Powell.
Just the person I speak to if I got a problem.
Yes, sir. What is your problem?
Too much food. Not enough sex.
Eric, that's not funny.
I thought it was pretty funny.
Okay, it was.
Hey, guess what?
What?
You are the third most popular blog on Salon.com.
I am?
Yes, you are.
I am!
Later with Eric.
So, I figure for everyone who writes in, there are, I don't know, hundreds that don't you think?
In bed.
It's like there's this whole group of people who are sort of connected to me. They need me in some way. Like if I didn't write, they would really be upset.
They'd probably take, like, poison, try to kill themselves.
As Julie falls asleep, Eric grabs a bedside container of antacid tablets and pops one in his mouth. He shuts off a lamp and stares up at the ceiling. Now, at a ballroom party, two French women head for the ladies' room. Inside, Julia sits at a vanity smoking a cigarette. Another American woman stands at a mirror.
Julia, are you still making hats?
Oh, no, I abandoned it, but...
The third woman primps.
I am ready to graduate from the Cordon Bleu. I can't get the damn woman who runs the school to schedule the test.
Madame Brassard?
Mm.
Is that the woman you are speaking of?
Oh, she's a bitch. She is, you're right. I think she's almost the only person in the world I honestly can't stand.
Oh, yeah. She is not the only person I can't stand.
Do you two know each other?
Mm. You should. Julia Child, Simone Beck.
Oh. Simka. Simka, how do you do?
Another woman enters.
And this is my friend, Louise Bertone.
Oh. Bonsoir.
Enchantée.
Can't believe you haven't met. Simka and Louisette are writing a cookbook.
For Americans?
Really?
Why do you need to take a stupid test?
So I can get a diploma, so I can teach.
You don't need a diploma to teach.
You're probably right. Avis says the same thing.
Who is Avis?
My friend, Avis DeVoto, lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She's very wise, but I can't help it. I want a diploma.
Julia stands.
I am very conventional.
Simka and Louisette eye her stature. Now all three exit the ladies' room.
I don't know what to do.
Well, why don't you write to the horrible Madame Brassard and threaten her?
Threaten her with what?
The United States of America? Yes.
Well,
tell her the American ambassador personally wants you to take the examination.
No. I couldn't do that. Heavens no, the American ambassador. Hardly even know the man.
Of course you can.
Dear Madame Brassard, everyone at the American Embassy, including my dear friend, the ambassador, will be very surprised if I'm not allowed to take my examination.
You will write the recipes for
Emmerlée, côtelette de veau en surprise et crème renversée au caramel.
Brassard leaves Julia alone at a desk.
Côtelette de veau en surprise?
Oui.
Surprise?
Now Julia shops with Simca and Louisette.
I had no idea what veal en surprise was. None. Cooked it in class. It's a veal chop with mushrooms in a bag. Paper bag. That's the surprise. You open the bag. Surprise! Veal mushrooms. It's just... Oh! I've never flunked a test in my entire life. I am an A student.
You can ask to take it again.
A surprised Julia regards her new friends.
I can?
Of course. Meanwhile, you can come teach with us.
Oh. Gosh!
At Le Cordon Bleu.
Is it true you plan to teach?
Yes, we're going to teach Americans in Paris how to cook.
Madame Schill, I must tell you, you have no real talent for cooking. But the Americans will never know the difference.
Brassard steps out, leaving Julia to retake her test. Now, in Queens, a hardback of Julia Child's biography strikes the alarm clock.
We are, I am sorry to say, entering aspics. An aspic is sort of a beef-flavored jello mold. Doesn't that sound delicious? I can't imagine why no one makes them anymore. You begin with a calf's foot, which I am in possession of thanks to my sainted husband, and you boil it until your kitchen smells like a tannery. And then it gels in the refrigerator, and you flip it onto a plate. Which, according to Julia Child, is supposed to be easy. And all I can say about that, no offense intended, Julia, is... the bitch lied.
Julia drops the aspic in the sink.
Shit.
Eric peeks in.
Shit!
How many more aspics are there?
7.
No one will know if you don't do them. It's not like there's, like...
the aspic police or something. You could lie.
I can't. I just can't. Julia will know. It's like she's watching me. I'm under her influence. I'm becoming a much better person because of her.
She faces the sink.
Yuck! The sink! Look at this!
Eric glances over as food and liquid spit up from the drain.
I hate it here. Did you put something down the sink?
You hate it here.
How am I supposed to cook anything in this kitchen? It's no wonder that my mold fell apart. I don't suppose we have any Drano.
Not unless you bought it.
I do all of this, and I'm supposed to buy Drano, too.
Right now, you are so not under the influence of Julia Child.
Julie pursues him to the couch. Eric shields his head with a pillow.
What if I don't make my deadline, Eric? I've wasted a whole year of my life. I used to be thin, and now I'm getting fat.
Fat?
On top of which, I have to bone a whole duck.
When?
At some point. Can you even conceive of boning a duck?
No, I can't.
Of course you can't.
Julie returns to the kitchen and kicks a trash can at her laptop.
I'm sure you all remember, because it was only a few days ago, that I had a meltdown over my aspic and vowed to transform myself into a better human being.
In the kitchen.
And then I was trussing the poulet rôti à la Normande, which is roast chicken stuffed with chicken livers and cream cheese. And it fell on
Damn
the floor,
it.
And the stuffing fell out into
Damn
a big, gooey mess.
She stuffs it back in.
What am I doing? So, long story short, another meltdown.
Crazy!
Worse than the last.
She sits on the floor. Eric notices.
Can't even trust.
And I cried, like a small, emotionally disturbed child.
I'm a mess.
She hunches forward.
I got it. Hello? Yeah, who's this? Can you hold on just one second? I'm not sure if she's here. She might have stepped out.
On the kitchen floor, Julie lies flat on her back. Eric approaches.
Hey, it's a reporter from the Christian Science Monitor.
He wants to write about you.
Julie sits up.
He does.
I should tell him to call back, right?
No, take it.
She gets up, goes into the living room, and grabs a tissue.
Hello? Yes? You want to bring who to dinner?
No, of course I know who that is. I know exactly who that is.
Eric mouths who, and Julie waves him off with the tissue.
That would be great. That would be completely amazing. Goodbye.
Who?
Guess who's coming to dinner? Oh, my God.
Now Louisette holds up a glass of wine.
Tous les trois gourmandes. One for all and all for one.
No.
Julia and Simca stand across from her in the child's kitchen.
I had such a horrible time converting these recipes from the metric system.
Measurements do not matter.
Oh, but they do. They absolutely do.
This is one of the biggest arguments Louisette and I had when we worked on our cookbook. Which is finally finished.
Oh.
Sent off to the publisher. Soon Simca and I will be famous. We'll be the next Mrs. Joy of Cooking.
Maybe. All right, well, let's try. Let's just give it a go.
Julie and Simca lift a table. Louisette stands.
Oh, c'est parfait. C'est beaucoup mieux.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is mieux. Oh! So, yes, they're early. Americans.
They teach.
Dear Dorothy, your sister Julia is now a cooking teacher. We have three students who pay $2 a class. Barely enough to cover the cost of the food, but who cares? Simca, Louisette, and I are les trois gourmandes. Although sometimes we are only les deux gourmandes because Louisette turns out to have headaches and doctor's appointments she schedules during class.
I have a little headache.
Louisette steps out.
You'll meet them both when you come here next month. Unless, of course, Louisette is having a stomach ache.
Julia tweaks knobs of dough baked together.
Even if it isn't, never apologize. No excuses, no explanations.
In a train station.
Louisette abandoned us another stomach ache, and the day before that, she left class before we even finished making the chocolate Bavarian cream.
Paul listens intently.
I can't believe that's the only time a dentist could see her. Keep an eye out, we don't want to miss Dorothy.
It's impossible to miss your sister.
On a platform, Julia waits next to Paul, holding yellow flowers.
I don't see her!
There she is.
Dorothy!
A tall, curly-haired woman with big hips gawks, smiling as she charges. The sisters embrace. Paul takes Dorothy's handbag.
Thank you! On the ocean liner! I didn't get sick once!
Good girl!
People were dropping like flies all around me.
In a restaurant.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
A waiter serves cheese.
All I think about all day is food. And then I dream about it all night.
It's true, she's obsessed. If I didn't sit in the kitchen, I'd never see her.
Last week, I dreamed that I made cassoulet for Dad. And he hated it. He doesn't understand any of this.
I almost feel sorry for him. He wanted so much for us to stay in Pasadena, marry Republicans, and breed like rabbits.
Why didn't we?
Too tall. Let's face it, it's true. From the beginning, you just don't fit in. Literally. So then you don't.
Dorothy faces Paul.
Do not bait Father about politics when he comes.
No.
Or he won't pick up the check. He won't, will he?
I can't make any promises.
He loves Senator McCarthy.
Oh, I know.
Pasadena. Jinx.
The sisters hook pinkies, tap their thumbs together, then wiggle their hands away. Julia playfully taps Dorothy on the nose.
Dorothy, you have the brie.
Is this the brie?
Yes.
Dorothy tries a dollop.
Is that not the most wonderful cheese you ever had in your life? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes.
Julia sucks a bit of cheese off her thumb.
Oh, I got the chef at Chez la Mère Michel to give me the recipe for beurre blanc.
Beurre blanc? What's beurre blanc?
Butter.
Oh, I love butter.
White wine vinegar reduction. You whisk them together, and the acid in the vinegar works on the milk solids in the butter so that the butter, instead of melting, becomes this creamy, light, frothy, with kind of a fantastic, subtle kind of...
tangy.
There's a tanginess.
Tanginess?
Yes.
Well, that's...
Julia gives a proud smile and shrugs.
That's who I married. Anyway, you serve it on fish. Mm. And it's splendid. I'm going to make it for you.
It'll be divine.
Yeah.
And Dort, we're going to throw you a party.
Oh! Yes. Really?
Oh! Oh. Very exciting. By the way, there's a man that I want to introduce you to.
All right.
I think you'll really... He's,
Tall. He's very tall.
Pardon?
Tall.
Tall. He's
extremely tall.
I'm extremely tall.
But he's even taller. So
he
that's good.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Now, Dorothy faces a wardrobe's full-length mirror. Julia enters, putting in an earring, and fastens a string of pearls around Dorothy's neck. Both wear a collared, knee-length dress of shiny fabric. Dorothy's is coppery orange, and Julia's midnight blue.
Pretty good.
They smile and cock their heads. Julia slips her hands into her pockets.
But not great.
Dorothy offers a merry shrug. Nighttime. Outside, upstairs windows show a crowded cocktail party within. Inside, Julia mingles with a tray of hors d'oeuvres.
Hello, ladies. Anybody want anything?
Two guests sample the fare.
Help yourself.
Julia, there you are.
A tall man faces Julia. She kisses his cheek.
There you are.
Now, where is this sister of yours?
She's right over there.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Paul.
There.
Dorothy flirts with a shorter man.
So we've told her a lot about her.
Well, I don't want to interrupt her conversation.
With Ivan Cousins? They just met. I can't imagine Dorothy running off with Ivan Cousins.
As Dorothy leans alluringly on an archway before an enchanted Ivan, Julia frowns. Ivan coyly brushes Dorothy's belt with his finger. Julia winces, and Paul eyes the pair curiously. Now, at an outdoor wedding, a young flower girl scatters handfuls of petals. She overshoots the aisle, then backtracks and heads down it toward a waiting priest. Julia files down the grassy aisle in her heels. Dorothy follows, wearing a simple wedding dress and holding her father's arm. She kisses his cheek, then faces the priest with Ivan.
Bien aimé, dearly beloved.
Later, an elegant pavilion with a roof shaped like a pith helmet houses dining tables and a dance floor. Dorothy and Ivan prance toward each other and clasp hands. Ivan blows Dorothy a kiss, then lifts her arm and pivots beneath it. They wave at Julia, who sits with Paul and her parents.
I've never been to a wedding like this before.
Here, Julia.
Her father lights her cigarette.
What a beautiful wedding.
Thanks, Pops.
I am not enthusiastic about this marriage.
Well, you weren't very enthusiastic about ours either.
True.
He glares at Paul.
How are things at the embassy, Paul?
Oh, fine. Thank you, Philip. Thank you. Well, not fine, really, because they've cut our library allowance by 90%.
Oh.
It seems that Senator McCarthy has very long
Julia
arms.
Kicks Paul.
Senator McCarthy is a man who knows his mind. I admire a man who knows his mind.
Well, we know lots of people in Washington who have lost their jobs after years in government service for no reason whatsoever. And Paul had to make a list of every single book in the embassy library.
Surely you're not suggesting that the French government is any better.
And
shall we dance? Come on, dance with me. Excuse me.
Paul and Julia hurry to the dance floor.
I know, I never learned.
Joining the other slow dancers, they clasp hands. Paul wraps his arm around Julia's waist, and they share a soft smile. Nearby, Dorothy bends and nuzzles Ivan, then kisses his forehead. Julia lovingly cups Paul's face in both hands, and he playfully dodges away. Later, he kisses her neck as they dance toward the newlyweds. Julia and Dorothy squeeze each other's arms, and Paul and Ivan shake hands. Now, the child's wood-paneled station wagon drives over a bridge. Later, outside their villa, Paul picks up mail from their concierge. Now, in the kitchen, Julia whisks a creamy sauce.
Where's my big sprig?
Look here, whipping away.
And for dinner, mayonnaise.
Paul scoops some up with his pinky and samples it.
That's good.
That is good, isn't it?
Very, from your sister.
I'm going to send this recipe to Avis. I'm very excited about it. I think it's a breakthrough.
Well, it tastes like
Julia
it.
Julia opens a letter. And she reads.
Oh.
As Paul snacks obliviously, she takes a seat. He glances at her. She flips to a second page.
Dorothy is pregnant. Oh. Oh, Paul, isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm.
She buries her face in his shoulder.
Yes.
He squeezes her close. He tenderly kisses her forehead. She pats his chest.
I'm so happy.
I know.
He presses his lips to her forehead once again. In a cafe.
If you warm the bowl slightly before you beat in the egg yolk, it changes everything. Foolproof mayonnaise. Absolutely foolproof.
Julia pulls out documents.
I typed it up.
She hands the sheets to Simone and Louisette, then studies their expressions. Her smile fades.
You disagree?
About the mayonnaise? Oh, not at all.
Oh,
I'm sure you are exactly right.
Scientific workability. That's my motto.
Julia, We have a little problem. Our editor, for our cookbook, thinks our book is not in English.
But your book is in English.
They are giving it a rejection. But they suggest that if we are continuing with it, we should get a collaborator who could take what we have and make it work for American cooks.
Mm.
Would you do it, Julia?
Would I do it?
Julia beams and closes her eyes.
Yes.
Now in Queens, Julie types.
We are now going to play a round of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. This Wednesday, I am going to be playing host to a distinguished guest. Clue number one. The degree of separation between Julia Child and me is about to shrink by a factor of about 1,000. In answer to your questions, no, it is not Amanda Hesser of the New York Times or Nigella Lawson or Ina Garten. But here's clue number two.
I would like some.
I will be making boeuf bourguignon, which was the first dish our distinguished guest cooked upon reading Mastering the Art of French Cooking for the first time.
In a market.
Boeuf bourguignon. Julia Child's boeuf bourguignon.
Later.
Well, since no one guessed my mystery guest, I'm going to have to tell you all.
Julie cooks.
It's Judith Jones, the editor who's responsible for getting Julia's cookbook published way back when. The woman who recognized history in an onion skin manuscript. She's older and probably not used to eating at 10 o'clock at night, which is why I am being diligent about this and making the stew the night before. And as I cook it, I almost feel as if Julia and I are communicating over space and time on a deep, spiritual, mystical level. Although...
She puts it in the oven.
Mostly I'm just talking to myself.
She sets a timer.
How long does it take to cook?
2.5 hours.
Later, a TV reads The French Chef. Dressed like Julia Child, Dan Aykroyd faces the camera.
I'm Julia Child. Today we're going to make a holiday feast, or Les Fêtes d'Holiday. And we're going to start with half-bone chicken or poulard demi de saucisson. First, remove the liver and fry it up with some onions for a little snack. Or perhaps a delicious liverwurst, which you can spread on a cracker, a Ritz cracker, a saltine. Or if you have a cat or a dog, they love liver. Save the liver. Don't throw away the liver. Place the chicken on its stomach and cut along the backbone to the Pope's nose like so.
The actor wavers.
Now I've done it. I've cut the dickens out of my finger. Well, I'm glad in a way this happened. You know,
Faith blood spews, dousing the chicken.
You must stop the bleeding.
Faith blood pours from his hand.
The best way is with direct pressure on the apron like so.
It spurts toward the camera.
You want to raise your hand over your head.
Julie and Eric quake with laughter. Blood covers the actor's white blouse.
Why are you all spinning? Well, I think I'm going to go to sleep now. Bon appetit.
He passes out. Later, Julie's timer ticks down from 57 minutes to 56. As Eric sleeps in bed, a clock on the nightstand reads 1:30. In the living room, Julie snoozes on the couch. Later, the timer shows 1 minute remaining. It ticks down to zero. Julie shifts in her sleep, snuggling a blanket. Outside, the pizzeria's lights go dark. In the living room, Julie still sleeps. The tabby jumps off the couch and ambles away. It strolls into the kitchen and takes a seat, staring at the oven. Later, in the living room, Julie jolts awake and gives a horrified gape.
No.
She scrambles into the kitchen. She yanks out the pot and takes off the lid, revealing her ruined stew. Back in Paris, Julia sits at a typewriter and lays carbon paper between two clean white pages.
Well, it's just a big, dry collection of recipes. It doesn't work at all. I'm just going to have to throw most of it out and start all over again.
She rolls the paper into the device.
This has got to be a cookbook that makes French cooking accessible to Americans who do not have cooks, who are servantless.
Julia blinks.
Is that a word? Servantless. I think it is a word.
She drags on a cigarette.
Julia. What if we had to leave Paris?
Why would we have to leave Paris?
Because my assignment was for 4 years.
So then we still have time.
8 months.
Seated at his own desk, Paul shifts.
This cookbook is not something you can finish in 8 months.
No, but 2 years seems possible.
Standing reluctantly, Paul paces toward her.
Julia.
He briefly creases his lips.
What if they transfer me someplace else?
Would they do that?
Yes. They don't really care about me.
Oh, Paul. Of course they do.
He narrows his eyes.
They don't, really.
Later, in a restaurant.
Well, if you can't stay in Paris, then I'll just mail the pages to Louisette and Simcoe, and they can mail them back to me. That's why they invented the mail system and carbon paper and onion skin copies. Or I can just jump on the train to Paris whenever the three of us absolutely have to work together. Or the two of us, actually, because as we know, Louisette does next to nothing. But we would still be somewhere in Europe, don't you think?
It's very hard to say, given the current political climate. Senator McCarthy does not like people like us.
Us? Why? What have we done?
We haven't done anything. That's not the point. The point is, we were in China, and that's practically sufficient.
Well, meanwhile, we're still here.
Yes, we are. You're right.
Yes.
Here's to the book.
Paul raises his glass.
French cooking for all. Or French home cooking. Do you like that? Which one do you like?
I like them both.
Now Julia types.
Dear Avis, enclosed is part of our cookbook from the chapter on sauces. Naturally, it must not be shown to anyone unless you are sure they are not, never have been, and won't have anything to do with the publishing business. There are people who would love nothing more than to steal this Hollandaise recipe.
In a subway station.
Oh, we're late. Do you suppose she'll be there?
Louisette? Of course she'll be there. It's at her house.
I was making a little joke.
A train arrives.
What's this about, anyway?
Louisette wouldn't tell me. She said it was a surprise.
Maybe she's dropping out of the project. That would be heavenly.
Julia.
Well, it would.
The women board. Now a maid leads them into a sitting room.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
My friends, this is Irma Rombauer. Mrs. Joy?
Later.
The first edition of The Joy of Cooking took me a year to write.
Only a year? Including testing the recipes?
Oh, well, I didn't really test all the recipes. There were so many of them. And then I found a publisher, a small printer in St. Louis.
How much money did he pay you?
I paid him $3,000.
$3,000?
A small fortune. But I had a little life insurance money because my husband...
Irma mimes shooting herself.
No.
He killed himself?
Yes. And I thought, well, what else am I going to do with the insurance money? And then the book began to sell, and Bob's Merrill picked it up, so now I had a real publisher. Oh.
And they gave you some money?
Absolutely not. They swindled me. They stole my copyright, and now there's a new edition, and guess what?
What?
The index is a complete calamity. If you're looking for city chicken, you're not going to find it under C.
Really?
It's under drumsticks mock.
No.
Later.
All she wanted to talk about was how her publisher had cheated her out of thousands of dollars in royalties. It just made me realize this. Not going to be simple, this getting published business.
This is from Avis for you.
Oh. Paul hands his wife a letter. Julie slips the letter from the envelope as she follows Paul into the apartment. She sits at the small entryway table where Paul turns on a lamp and sets down his hat. Julia smiles.
Oh, Avis loves my sauce chapter.
Oh, that's wonderful, darling.
Oh, no.
She glares at the ceiling.
She showed it to someone, which I specifically asked her not to do. She showed it to an editor at Houghton Mifflin in Boston, and the Boston editor showed it to the head of publishing.
Julia steps
Paul.
Frantically about.
Yes.
Paul.
What?
They want to publish our book.
Oh, that's great news.
And they want to give us an advance.
How much?
$250.
No.
And when the book is finished, $500 more.
I'm so proud of you.
The editor loves the book.
Julia reads more.
Oh, she just loves it.
Now in Queens, Julie writes in her blog as Eric pulls on his jacket.
So with the smell of burned stew still in the air, I woke up dying of stomach cramps. I called in sick.
And went back to bed for several hours.
Eric grabs his bike.
Put it in the blog in case someone in your office reads it.
Went back to bed for several hours.
At the meat market.
By noon, I was somehow able to straighten myself up to a standing position.
What do you make?
Bought the ingredients for Wolf Bourguignon all over again. Dragged myself home. And made another Wolf Bourguignon.
Julie breathes in the stew's steam.
And for dessert, a raspberry Bavarian cream.
She stirs thick pink cream.
By the end of the day, I felt fine. I was cooking dinner for a legend, even though I'd never really heard of her until a few months ago.
Maybe she'll offer you a book contract.
Wow. What if she does? I mean, what would that mean? That would mean I might be a writer.
She sets out crudité.
How much money do people make for books?
Like an advance? I have no idea.
$100,000?
Don't even say it.
Julie stows a stack of newspapers in a bin. She briskly strides to the phone and picks up.
Hello? Hi.
She smiles broadly and nods.
I know. It is here, too. Cats and dogs.
Her face falls.
I know.
She sits on the couch.
I know. Well, thanks. Bye.
Eric watches as Julie poutily hangs up.
So not coming.
Julie shakes her head, her lips pursed in a frown.
That was the guy from the Christian Science Monitor. It's raining. And we live in Long Island City, and she's, like, older. It's mortifying.
But on the bright side, more stew for us.
Just for once, could you not look on the bright side?
Eric struts away.
Yeah,
Well, it's not the end of the world.
I thought book contract. Me, Judith Jones, happily ever after, and then we'd have a little money and we wouldn't live over a pizzeria for the rest of our lives. How am I going to explain this? My readers are going to be really upset. They were so into it.
Your readers are going to be really upset.
I never should have told everyone.
They'll live.
Eric salts his food.
Somehow, your readers will live.
Julie watches, her mouth agape.
Is it bland?
Not anymore.
Thank you for telling me that. You almost let me feed Judith Jones bland bouffe bourguignon. This is a nightmare. I told everyone she was coming.
They will survive. And when this year is over, and I cannot wait until it is, your readers will somehow get on with their lives.
And I won't? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, what's going to happen when you're no longer the center of the universe?
Oh, that's just great. I am finally totally engaged in something. Okay, maybe I'm being a little narcissistic.
A little? On a scale of 10.
Julie bites a carrot stick.
Okay, a 9.3, but what do you think a blog is? It's me, 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 day after day.
I thought it'd be fun. How stupid is that? It just turns out to be a lot of what you call meltdowns, but they don't feel like meltdowns. They feel like I'm living with a totally self-absorbed person who writes this stuff for a bunch of complete strangers. And it's supposed to be a big adventure, but it's not. It's our life. It's our marriage. And here in this room, it doesn't feel like an adventure. It feels like shit.
It was your idea!
I know, I'm so sorry. What the hell was I thinking? And I'll tell you
something. Julie glares from the bathroom doorway.
I am not a saint.
Oh, yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. And it makes me feel like an asshole every time you say it.
Eric grabs his jacket.
And do not write about this in your blog.
About what?
About this fight.
He puts it on as he strides toward the stairs.
I'm out of here.
He grabs his coat from a hook, picks up his bag, and hurries downstairs. Back in Paris, Paul carefully wraps a pot lid in newspaper and packs it into a box. Facing him, Julia fidgets with her cardigan as she gazes forlornly around the half-packed kitchen. Paul looks at her.
You all right, Julia?
Yes, fine.
Julia forces a smile.
Perfectly fine. Dear Avis, we finished packing today, and tomorrow we leave beloved Paris for Marseille. Paul has been appointed Cultural Affairs Commissioner for the South of France. I'm having a hard time pretending to be anything but devastated. I'm going to go buy some bread. The advantage of Marseille is that it won't have the distractions of Paris. So, we'll be able to finish the book.
The child's pose for a photo.
Although not on deadline.
They hold a paper heart.
At least we're still in France.
Julia addresses a postcard version of the Valentine. Now they pose in a tub.
Dear Avis,
look at me.
I don't know what we've done to deserve it, but here we are in Germany.
In a postcard
actually,
version, they share a doting gaze amid the soapy suds. Julia ink stamps the postcard, wish you were here, and addresses
it. Much more picturesque than it is. By the way, there is no chance we'll meet our new deadline. We'll be at least 2 more years. Meanwhile, Paul has been called to Washington. We have no idea why.
Well, they're going to promote you, finally. They have to.
Well, I don't know why they have to call me back to Washington to tell me that.
Now Paul snaps photos of Julia stuffing a duck.
They're going to reassign you then. They'll ask you whether you prefer Paris or Paris.
Julia sews the duck, binding it around the stuffing.
It's a possibility. It's not likely, but it is a possibility.
And if they are moving us back to Paris, I can look for an apartment when I'm there next week.
Paul gives a reserved nod.
Good idea, yes? Mm-hmm.
I promise I'll call you the minute they tell me we're being transferred back to Paris. All right?
All right.
Julia poses, pulling the sewn flaps of the duck together.
It could happen, I know. Stay right there. That's perfect.
Say cheese, ducky.
Good.
Put your legs together, darling.
In Paris.
It's very simple. We're just going to tell her she should have a smaller share of the royalties because it is clear she can't put in the 40 hours a week you and I are spending.
60 is more like it.
Exactly.
80.
You and I are vaches enragées.
That's exactly what we are. Mad cows. Mm. But I can't bring myself to say this to Louisette. You're going to have to do it.
I will do it. We must be cold-blooded. I shall love her much more when this is settled.
Now, at a cafe with Louisette.
It isn't that you're not helping to some extent.
But I am helping. It was my idea to add peas to the cocoa vin recipe.
We know, and that was a wonderful idea. But the book has become a magnum opus.
But we are a team. We are les trois gourmandes. One for all.
Yes, it's absolutely true, Louisette. Yes, it's true. And you have been very valuable to the project.
Thank you.
But
Louisette's eyes fill with tears and she blows her nose on a folded handkerchief.
I'm getting a divorce.
What?
Jean-Luc is leaving me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, Louisette.
Just forget. Forget it. That I even mentioned it.
But it isn't fair for Louisette to get the same amount of money that we do.
This is not the time to discuss this. She's getting a divorce.
She doesn't do the work.
Louisette glares. Simca faces her.
You don't do the work, so your share should be 10%.
10%?
You're not doing the work.
25.
15.
20.
18, and not a penny more. And where it says our names, I think it should say, by Julia Child and Simone Beck, with Louisette Berthold. With! And in smaller type.
No, Simca. Our name's exactly the same. Exactly the same. And alphabetical. Alphabetical.
Julia resumes eating. Later, she returns with Simca to her apartment.
But it was not even our idea to put the peas in the cocoa bar.
Simca's concierge opens the front door as they approach.
Oh, a telegram, madame.
For me?
Julia uses the phone.
Dear Avis, we've been through our own version of Kafka. Oh. Paul went off to Washington. Well, and in my innocence, I thought it must be because the United States government had finally realized how valuable he was. Far from it, he was being investigated. He spent 3 days being grilled in a windowless room with a foot-high stack of papers ominously sitting on the table. They asked him about our friends, our books, our China years, our patriotism. They even asked him if he was a homosexual.
With Paul.
Are you a homosexual, Mr. Child?
No.
Paul smiles faintly.
I'm not a homosexual.
An investigator leans closer.
This is not a joke.
I'm well aware of that.
He came home exonerated, but thoroughly bruised.
Oh, Julia, it was a nightmare.
Paul sits on the edge of the bed.
What am I going to do? I feel like my entire life has been a waste.
Oh.
I have one more posting. Then I'll retire. And then what?
He climbs in next to Julia.
Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out.
As he settles under the covers, Julia watches with tender, thoughtful eyes.
I just don't know what it was all for.
Paul turns questioningly to his wife.
You know?
He shifts his downhearted gaze and Julia looks away.
You at least have the book.
It's your book, too. It is.
She gets comfy under the covers.
Without you, it wouldn't be a book.
They share a glance.
Not that Simca and I'll ever be done with it.
Someday you'll be done.
I'm beginning to wonder.
They look at each other, and Julia worriedly presses her lips together. Paul touches her forehead reassuringly, then turns off the light. Morning. In Queens, Julie shifts restlessly in bed. With a frown, she glances at Eric's empty pillow. Later, she sits at her laptop.
So to wrap things up, at 6:22 last night, guess who wasn't coming to dinner? That's right. It began pouring down rain, and Judith Jones canceled. I was utterly crushed. And then on top of everything, I had a horrible fight with my husband, and he left me.
Julie's wide blue eyes fill with tears as she types. She rests her chin on her hand and rereads the passage. Her lips tighten sorrowfully. She highlights the last sentence, deletes it, and determinedly resumes typing.
The bouff bourguignon was delicious. Not that I ate it. As for the raspberry Bavarian cream, I am taking it to the office.
Now, as Julie carries a paper bag to work, the bottom breaks and the dessert crashes to the ground. At the office.
Morning.
Julie greets Ernestine.
Julie, could you come in here?
I didn't tell him, I swear.
Julie?
As Julie appears in the doorway, her boss turns from his computer and gives her a stern look.
Feeling better?
Much.
Julie nods and sits down.
So, you burned the stew.
But that's not why I didn't come to work. I didn't come to work because I had
stomach flu. Listen, it's a free country. But this little thing of yours on the internet, I do not want to show up in it, okay?
Julie nods.
And if you don't feel like coming into work, let me know. Somebody will want this job. We're trying to do something here.
She nods again, her face solemn.
I'm sorry.
She purses her lips and rises.
Anyone else would fire you. A Republican would fire you. I'm not a schmuck.
Hands in her skirt pockets, Julie heads off. Later, she sits at a bar with Sarah, holding a half-drunk martini.
I'm in shock. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. You're like the ones. If you and Eric can't make it work, who can?
Julie shakes her head.
Oh, all sorts of people can, just not me, because I am a bitch. I am Sarah. I'm a bitch.
Sarah gives a sympathetic look.
I know. I know you are.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah sips her martini.
By the way, Garth and I broke up.
Oh, God, I didn't even ask. I am a one-way street, just like Eric says.
It's okay. I wasn't in love with him.
Do you really think I'm a bitch?
Sarah knits her brow.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
But who isn't?
Julie gives a thoughtful look.
Julia.
Later, Julie rides the train home, then writes in her blog.
I've been thinking about me and Julia. She was a secretary for a government agency, and I am too. A really nice guy married her. A really nice guy married me. Both of us were lost, and both of us were saved by food in some way or other. So, major overlaps. But let's face it, I am not Julia Child. Julia Child never lost her temper just because something boiled over or collapsed in the oven or just plain fell through. And she was never horrible to her husband, I'm sure. And she never behaved like, who has time to be married, which is how I behave sometimes, I'm sorry to say. I wish I were more like her. She deserved her husband, and I don't. That's the truth. Well, anyway, that's the truth for now. Yogurt for dinner.
She moves the cursor to the publish button on screen and clicks it, then turns off the desk lamp.
For a while, all we did was smile.
Julie picks up the cordless phone and dials. She sits on the bed with the handset to her ear. Meanwhile, in his office, Eric lies on the couch reading. He glances at the phone.
Hi, you reached Eric Powell at Archaeology Magazine. Leave a message.
I hated sleeping without you last night. Where are you? I miss you.
In the apartment, Julie hangs up. In his office, Eric leans his head back on a pillow. Julie falls backward onto the bed, the phone clutched to her chest. She turns it on again and listens. She hangs up. Now, Eric sits at his work computer, eyes trained on Julie's blog. As he reads her latest entry, he swallows hard. In the apartment, Julie lies face down on the bed with a pillow over her head and the phone clutched in her hand.
Something wrong?
No. Why would you think that?
Are you and Eric having some kind of problem?
Of course not.
Is he there and you can't talk?
He's not here.
I just read your blog and it was strange and uncharacteristically thoughtful. Where is he?
Out. He went out to get pizza.
Have you stopped cooking?
Just temporarily. Just taking a little break from cooking.
Well, get back to it. It's gonna be good for you to finish something for once in your life. Julia didn't give up.
Who says I'm giving up?
Well, I'm just saying, don't.
Julie hangs up and glares at the phone. With a resolute look, she sits up. She flops back again. She sits up, swings her legs off the bed, and marches into the kitchen, the phone still in her hand.
Don't throw this away.
Julie strides out of the apartment, her face set firmly. Inside a market, she closes her eyes as she smells a bunch of fresh basil. Now she walks down the sidewalk, toting a grocery bag.
Just hold on to
She slows down as she approaches the apartment and notices Eric crossing the street toward her. He puts his hands in his pockets and greets her with a faint smile. She flashes a hopeful, wide-eyed smile.
Are you back? Please be back.
She tears up. Eric takes a deep breath.
What's for dinner?
He smiles warmly and Julie reciprocates. Eric's lips spread in a wide grin and he reaches for Julie's groceries. He takes the bag, then slings an arm around her shoulders as they head inside. Now, Julia and Simca cross a train station.
Well, Ava said she'd be here. Even if we were late.
Well, if she's not here, we can take a taxi. Oh. They probably have taxis in Boston.
Mm. Oh, she'll be here, wearing a plaid jacket. That's how I'm to recognize her.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean, recognize her? Has she changed?
Oh. They set down their luggage and sit on a bench. Julia shows her a letter.
Look for the middle-aged woman in a plaid jacket. So...
You and Davis have never met.
We're just pen pals.
You don't know each other?
Well, we do. We write.
But how did you start writing one another?
Oh, that's a long story. Avis's husband, Bernard DeVoto, now dead, was a wonderful, wonderful writer. He wrote an article in Harper's Magazine all about stainless steel knives and... Oh, he absolutely detested them.
Yes.
And so I wrote him a fan letter because he was 100% right. And Avis wrote me back. And so I wrote her back and she wrote me back. It's been 8 years, I think.
They peer across the terminal to an entrance where a bespectacled woman in a plaid jacket hurries in and stops. She spots their bench and Julia stands. The newcomer touches her chest.
Avis.
Julia.
With open arms, the two cross the floor and embrace.
My darling friend.
Look at you.
They hug. Now, in a conference room, the three of them sit with three male executives and a female editor.
This is a very impressive undertaking, Mrs. Child and Mrs. Beck.
Well, thank you very, very much.
And your editor loves it.
I do. I think it's brilliant. There's really nothing else like it on the market.
The problem is not just the length.
700 pages.
Yes, we know it is long.
Yes, we know it's long.
Yes, 700 pages of just... sauce and poultry recipes.
We were thinking that you could publish it in a series of volumes. Volume one, sauces. Volume two...
poultry.
Yes. Volume three, fish, meat, vegetables, and desserts. That's six volumes.
Eggs. Eggs.
Eggs, seven. Seven volumes.
But we don't want to publish an encyclopedia.
I thought this was intended for housewives.
Yes, housewives want something quick with a mix.
A book entitled Real Home Cooking shows a chubby American woman.
But if I may speak for everyone, if you were willing to revise it, I'm sure we would all be interested.
Now, at her home, Avis mixes cocktails. Simca reads the cookbook.
Simca, I am so sorry. You just picked the wrong collaborator.
Yes, I should have worked with this woman. Baked Alaska in a flower pot.
We'll just take the book away from Houghton Mifflin and find another publisher. We have just begun to fight. Julia, your book is a masterpiece.
What is marshmallow fluff?
Oh, and keep the advance, by the way. Keep the entire $250. Don't give them back a penny of it.
Why did we ever decide to do this anyway? What were we thinking?
Who can remember?
Avis regards Julia.
I can. We wanted to write a French cookbook for American women who do not have cooks. So then, that's what we'll do. We'll just do it all over again. And that's that. It'll be easy. It will. The dessert section is done, thanks to Simca. It is brilliant.
Thank you.
I just haven't typed it up yet, but that will give me something to do in Oslo.
Now, Julia sharpens a knife.
I love you.
In her own kitchen, Julie sharpens a knife and slices the air. Now we see Julia turning a crank on a manual sieve strainer, then Julie turning on a food processor. Julia punches keys on a typewriter, floating island. Julie's laptop screen shows her right. So last night I made floating. Julia tastes gooey cheese topping. Julie pinches cheese stretching to her lips. Julia rubs creamy paste on an uncooked chicken. Julie removes a cooked chicken from the oven.
Eric, come see the world's most beautiful chicken.
Now Julia, then Julie, then Paul, then Eric, each raid the medicine chests in their bathrooms. As Julia spreads icing over a cake, Paul enters and dabs his finger in the bowl. She smacks his hand as he steals a taste. Julie lays out a chocolate-frosted cake rimmed with chipped almonds. Before she can slice it, Eric digs in. He playfully smushes a piece into her mouth, then rubs it over his own face. Now Julia and Paul box up a copy of the manuscript.
Oh, I want to savor this moment. Mm-hmm. The moment when anything is possible. The moment that you can just imagine they're going to love everything you did, and it's going to sell a million copies and change the world.
Yes. But I think it calls for a great bottle of wine, don't you think?
Yes.
What's for dinner?
Now, Julie sprays a mirror with glass cleaner and wipes it down.
What if she doesn't eat pork?
She's a food writer. Of course she eats pork. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
You're right. I know you're right. I'm sure you're right. Is she early?
She's right on time. I'll finish.
Thank you. Thank you. You are a terrible human being. And very difficult to live with.
Julie goes to the intercom.
Who is it?
Amanda Hester from the New York Times.
Yeah. Come in.
Later, a photographer documents the pork chops and side dishes.
You have such a sense of Julia when you do something like this. As a teacher, as a voice, I have conversations with her while I'm cooking.
As they eat, the reporter jots notes.
I feel like she is there with me in the kitchen.
She's like your imaginary friend.
Yes. And of course, she is the person I write for every day. Although I don't think she ever reads it. I don't know. I'm dying to meet her. I would like to be a bridesmaid in her wedding in 1946. I realize that would take an inexplicable episode of time travel, but that is the sort of thing that I think about.
We're planning a pilgrimage to Julia's Cambridge kitchen in the Smithsonian Museum when this is over.
But first I have to finish. I have 15 days and 24 recipes, and I still have to bone a duck.
The chewing reporter's eyes widen.
I read somewhere that it was bad form to say yum while you're eating, but yum.
Now, a man reads a newspaper article entitled A Race to Master the Art of French Cooking with Julie's picture. Julie sits next to the reader on the subway. At a food shop, Julie peeks over a man's shoulder who glances at the same article. She turns to Ernestine and they high-five. At work, Julie sets down a cup of coffee and puts on her headset.
Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, this is Julie Powell. Please hold. Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, this is Julie Powell. Can you hold?
Yes.
Great. Lower Manhattan Development Corporation.
It's Sarah, the New York Times. I can't believe it.
I know. Can I call you back? I have to call you back. Hold on. Hello, this is Julie Powell. How can I help you?
At home, Julie carries a stack of newspapers upstairs.
Hi.
Hey.
Eric lies on the couch.
Guess what? Messages on machine?
65.
She puts the stack of papers down, puts down her purse, and goes to the machine.
If this is the Julie Powell in this morning's New York Times, this is Judy Klein. I'm an editor at Little Brown, and I wanted to talk to you about whether you were interested in writing a book.
Julie bounces excitedly and beams at her husband.
049-0067. Hi, this is Sarah Chalfin. I'm a literary agent. I don't know if you have an agent, but I would love to talk to you about representing you.
I'm a producer at the CBS Morning
Eric,
News.
Eric, I'm going to be a writer.
You are a writer.
She dives on top of him and kisses him repeatedly.
This is Ruth Spungen. I'm an editor at Food and Wine Magazine. Please give me a call at 212-157-3245.
I have to make a pear tart.
Later.
Hi, it's Mom. Oh, you're in the New York Times? I can't tell you, everybody is calling.
Now, a shirtless Eric carries Julie over to the bed, and they flop onto it.
He won the pie-eating contest and is a crossword puzzle nut. They have a subscription to the New York Times. They saw it in Abilene. Everyone is so excited.
This is Ken Dreyer. I'm an editor at Random House, and I just read your blog, and it's
I'm
great.
I'm a literary agent here in New York, and I was wondering...
I'm an editor at Bon Appetit.
I'm an editor at Epicurious.
Hi, I'm a producer at the Food Network. We'd love to meet with you.
Talk to you.
We have some ideas. I don't know whether you're thinking of turning this into
a book.
A movie.
Television series.
The one-woman show.
Call me.
Call me.
Call me.
Their cat looks up. In bed, Eric rolls on his back.
Thank you, God.
Julie carries in two full martini glasses and sits with him on the bed.
And Eric.
And we are busy cooking.
And blogging.
And other stuff, so leave a message.
Make him better.
Just make him
stronger. Mm-hmm.
Hi, it's Barry Ryan from the Santa Barbara News Press, and I'm writing an article about Julia Child's 90th birthday, and I asked her about your blog, and frankly, she was kind of a pill about it, so I thought maybe you'd want to come in.
Julie rushes to the phone.
Hello? Yes, it is.
Eric looks on from the bed. Listening, Julie's expression goes blank.
She said that? Julia Child said that. Has she read my blog? No, I don't really want to comment. But thank you for calling.
Julie hangs up and looks at Eric sitting up attentively.
Julia hates me.
She frowns. Back in the 50s, Julia sits on a couch with her feet up. Paul arrives.
Joel? They hate us.
Who?
Houghton Mifflin.
Paul sets down his briefcase, and Julia hands him a letter. He shifts her feet a smidge on the coffee table and sits facing her. He adjusts his glasses and reads.
They don't hate you.
They do. They absolutely do.
And they say the book is good.
But they don't want to publish it.
Well, they think it's too expensive. They think it's economically prohibitive.
8 years of our lives just turned out to be something for me to do. So I wouldn't have nothing to do. Oh, well. Boo-hoo. Now what?
Paul folds up the letter and lays it aside.
You're a teacher.
Yeah.
You can teach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We'll go home and...
Where's home? Where do we live?
Paul takes a seat beside her on the couch and rests a hand on her thigh.
Home is wherever we are.
Yeah.
All right? And we'll work it out. We'll figure it out. You can teach in our kitchen.
True.
You can teach on television.
She eyes him.
Television?
Mm-hmm.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, Paul.
Oh, no, Julia, I think you would be excellent on television. I do.
Paul!
I do.
No.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not. Someone is going to publish your book. Someone is going to read your book and realize what you've done. Because your book is amazing. Your book is a work of genius. Your book is going to change the world. Do you hear me?
You are so sweet.
She takes his hand.
You are.
He kisses her hand.
The sweetest man.
He wraps his arm around her and kisses her forehead.
Fuck them.
Now, a sign outside an office reads, Alfred A. Knopf, New York.
Judith, would you take a look at this? Our intrepid literary scout, Avis DeVoto, is friends with some woman who's written a huge French cookbook. Houghton Mifflin just turned it down.
A preppy editor reads the title page.
French recipes for American cooks. Terrible title.
Have fun, Judith.
Judith exhales wearily through pursed lips, then picks up the box containing the manuscript and leans back in her chair. As she reads, a smile spreads across her face. Later, at home, Judith dries cubed red meat with a paper towel. Now she pours red wine into a stock pot on the stove. Steam surges upward. A recipe at her side reads, Bœuf Bourguignon. Later, the editor faces the pot, skeptically tensing her lips. She slurps a sample from a wooden spoon, smacks her lips, and smiles.
Yum.
She scoops up a chunk and eats it. Her eyelids flutter as she reels ecstatically.
Yum!
She shakes her head.
Oh.
Now words label a two-story colonial house, Cambridge, Massachusetts. In a kitchen, Paul and Julia organize and unpack cookware.
Oh, wrong. Oh, here it is.
What? Who's that?
No.
Outside, a postman waits at the front door. Julia opens up and shivers.
Special delivery for Mrs. Julia Child.
Julia?
Yes.
Julia signs on a clipboard.
You are...
She shoves her arms into the sleeves of a sweater draped over her shoulders. The postman hands her an envelope and leaves. The envelope reads, Alfred A. Knopf, Incorporated, Special Delivery. Julia clutches the letter to her chest and glances nervously inside the house. Creeping across the porch, the chef summons a breath and paces. She takes a seat on a cushioned wicker bench, opens the envelope, and reads.
Dear Mrs. Child, we have read your superb French cookbook, studying it, cooking from it, estimating, and so on. And we have come to the conclusion that it is a unique book that we would be very proud to publish.
Paul! Paul!
What? 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 What?
Knopf! Knopf wants to publish our book. Is it Knopf or Knopf?
Who cares?
Who cares? They want to offer us an advance of $1,500.
Oh, my God.
We believe that your book will do for French cooking here in America.
But Rombauer's The Joy of Cooking did for standard cooking. And we will sell it that way. Oh, dear.
They hug.
When we meet, which I hope will be very soon, I especially want to talk to you about the title of the book. Because it is of the utmost importance that the title distinguish this book from all the other cookbooks on the market.
In her office, Judith posts note cards.
Is this the way you normally do this?
Absolutely not.
Judith rearranges some of the cards on the bulletin board and reads the result.
Mastering the art of French cooking.
Julia perks up. Judith gapes.
What do you think?
Well, at this point, I have no idea. Whatsoever.
Julia, that won't do.
Oh, all right, then. I love it.
Now in Julie's Queen's apartment.
She said hate. Julia Child used the word hate.
No. But she said I wasn't respectful or serious or something.
Later.
How much more serious could a person be?
Later still.
Do you think she thinks I'm sort of using her?
She can't have read your blog. Did she read it?
He didn't know if she'd read it. But she definitely had an opinion about it.
Later still.
Do you think it's because I use the F word every so often?
Could be. Who knows?
They sit face to face.
Look, there's something wrong with her if she doesn't get what you're doing.
There's nothing wrong with her, nothing. I've spent a year with her. She's perfect.
The Julia Child in your head is perfect. The Julia Child that doesn't understand what you're doing is not perfect. The one in your head is the one that matters.
Julie slouches, wincing tearfully.
I'm never gonna meet her.
She flops onto the bed.
But you already know her.
She sits back up.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
She saved me.
You saved yourself.
I was drowning and she pulled me out of the ocean.
Don't get carried away.
Now Julie types.
Julia Child began learning to cook because she loved her husband, and she loved food, and she didn't know what else to do with herself, and in the process, she found joy. I didn't understand this for a long time, but I do now. Julia taught me that. But here's what Julia really taught me. She taught me to cook. So here we are. One day to go and one recipe.
She turns to a duck recipe, now on TV.
You may think that boning a duck is an impossible feat, and the whole procedure...
Nothing is impossible.
...takes as long as 45 minutes the first time because of fear. Don't be afraid.
No fear, Julia. No fear.
Take your knife. Confront the duck.
Hunting the duck.
Julie aims her knife.
You make
you are my duck.
A deep slit down the back of the bird, all the way from the neck down to the tail, to expose the backbone.
Julie slides the blade down the back of a raw duck on a cutting board.
Edge always cutting against
I did it.
The bone.
Look at that, Julia. It looks just like yours.
Later, on TV, Julia sews the stuffed duck shut. Julie does the same. On TV, Julia wraps the duck in pastry dough. Julie swaddles hers in dough, too. Later, she pulls a golden dough-wrapped loaf from the oven.
Look at this. It looks exactly the way it's supposed to look.
On a roof, Eric passes Julie flowers and plates through a window. Eric climbs out and jogs around to help her. Nighttime at a rooftop dinner party. Julie brings out the duck and bows.
Thank you. La pièce de résistance. 365 days, 524 recipes.
Eric raises his glass. The guests toast.
Thank you, guys. Julia.
Later they dine.
Great. It's fantastic. So good.
Julie takes a bite.
I love it.
She taps her glass, stands, and swallows, facing her husband.
Eric, I could never have done this without you. As someone once said, you are the butter to my bread, the breath to my life.
Oh.
To my husband.
Eric raises his glass.
I love you, babe.
She blogs.
So it's over. The project has come to a close. We're back exactly where we started. Eric, me, the cat, slightly worse for wear, sitting in the outer burrows, eating. So thanks, everybody. And guess what? Bon appétit!
Our view drifts away from Julie's window. Now, in the Smithsonian, a wall display reads, Julia Child's Kitchen. Julie and Eric arrive at a roped-off exhibit as a wistful young woman snaps a photo of it.
See how the counters are raised? She had them made special.
Eric takes a photo of the counters. Julie points.
There's her famous mortar and pestle.
So lucky.
Eric snaps another photo.
Take my picture.
Julie poses, smiling by a portrait of Julia. Eric takes a picture.
That's nice. Give me something else.
So lucky. Talking to her.
That's good.
Julie poses as if chatting.
One more.
Very sweet.
She leans close.
That's the one.
Eric heads off. Julie faces Julia's portrait with a faint smile, then glances around warily. Opening her purse, she pulls out a pound of butter and shows it to the portrait. She sets it down on a ledge beneath the framed photograph and gazes at the renowned chef's coy grin.
I love you, Julia.
Julie smiles and strolls off around a corner. Beside the portrait, Julia's Cambridge kitchen stands by, quaint and vacant. Celery green paint covers the door and a set of drawers, and seafoam blue covers the cupboards. In the center of the homey, well-organized space, the table rests set for two. We glide inside, over the rope cordoning off the room, and past cookbooks crammed onto a narrow bookshelf. Cookware hangs from pegboard on the walls. The overhead lighting fades, and shadows appear as sunshine washes in from one side. A shadow passes over the door, then Julia bustles in. She lifts the lid of a Dutch oven on the stove, and steam billows out. Bending over, she sniffs the contents. She picks up a wooden spoon and stirs the stew. As Paul enters, Julia glances up. They share a kiss. Paul plops a package down on the table and takes a seat. Julia adjusts the stove and joins him.
Something for you.
He hands her the package. The chef takes it quizzically. Turning it over, she slides her fingers under the manila envelope's flap, then struggles to rip it open.
So lucky.
She pulls out a hardcover copy of her book. Her jaw drops.
Oh,
She claps a hand to her mouth and the image freezes. Fade to black. Text rolls upward. Paul Child died in 1994 at the age of 92. Julia Child died in 2004 at the age of 91. Mastering the Art of French Cooking is now in its 49th printing. Julie Powell's book, Julie and Julia, was published in 2005. She and Eric still live in Queens, although they no longer live over a pizzeria. She is a writer. Her book has been made into a movie. Credits roll. Cast. Meryl Streep as Julia Child, Amy Adams as Julie Powell, Stanley Tucci as Paul Child, Chris Messina as Eric Powell, Linda Emmond as Simone Beck, Helen Carey as Louisette Berthold, Marilyn Rajkub as Sarah, Jane Lynch as Dorothy McWilliams, Joan Juliet Buck as Madame Brassard, Crystal Noel as Ernestine, George Bargenief as Chef Max Bunyar. Vanessa Ferlito as Cassie, Casey Wilson as Regina, Jillian Bach as Annabelle, Andrew Garman as John O'Brien, Michael Brian Dunn as Yvonne Cousins, Remak Ramsey as John McWilliams, Diane Kagan as Phyllis McWilliams, Pamela Holden Stewart as instructor at Le Cordon Bleu, Jeff Brooks as minister, Francis Sternhagen as Irma Rombauer, Brooks Ashmanskas as Mr. Mischer, Eric Sheffer Stevens as Tim, Brian Avers as Garth, Casey Sheik as Annette, Megan Byrne as Woman at the Party, Deborah Rush as Avis DeVoto, Helen Cox as Dorothy de Santiana, Amanda Hesser as herself, Marianne Urbano, Simon Jutras, Felicity Jones as dinner guests, Meg Kettle as Simca's concierge, Stephen Bogardis as Scott McLeod, Byron Jennings, Kelly O'Quinn, Richard Beacons as Houghton Mifflin executives, Luke Pallon as the chestnut vendor, Remy Rubaca as Oysterman, Marceline Hugo as Madame Bernheim, Aaron Dilly as Judith Jones, Robert Emmett Lunny as Bill Koshland, Giuseppe Jones as mailman, Jeff Talbot, Johnny Sparks as interrogators, Simon Field, Paul Borghese, Mark Gindick, D.L. Schroeder, Darren DePaul as GIs, Tom Galantich as American ambassador, Alan Burroughs as waiter in Paris Cafe, Natalie Sinovia Cummins, Maxime Moston, Shamel Katz, Paul Onisanti, Eric G. Halvorsen as musicians at the wedding, Judia Prudhomme as bridge teacher, Dimitri Radochevich as fishmonger, Emmanuel Suarez as baker, Christelle Cornille as baker's wife, Francoise Lebrun as baker's mother, Teddy Bergman as Cobb salad waiter, Jean-Pierre Becker as fruit store owner, Mark Wilkins as butcher, Jamie Hall as cheese guy, Francesco David as butcher, Denise M. Whalen, Luis Villabon, Valentina April, and Alexander Brady as dancers. Roy William Gardner as exhibit guest, Diane Dreyer as American housewife, Evelyn B. Toucher as hat-making teacher, Mary Kay Place as voice of Julie's mom. Copyright 2009 Columbia Pictures Industries Incorporated. All rights reserved. Columbia Pictures Industries Incorporated is the author of this film, Motion Picture, for the purpose of copyright and other laws. While this story is based on actual events, certain characters, incidents, locations, and dialogue were fictionalized or invented for purposes of dramatization. As respects such characters, incidents, and locations, any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person living or dead, or any product or entity or actual incident is entirely coincidental and unintentional. American Humane monitored some of the animal action. No animals were harmed in those scenes. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Columbia Pictures. Read by Leilani Jones Wilmore. For more information about motion picture access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. In a logo, a woman stands on a tiered pedestal. Wearing a Roman toga, she holds a torch aloft. Columbia Pictures. Julie types.
Julia Child began learning to cook because she loved her husband, and she loved food, and she didn't know what else to do with herself, and in the process, she found joy. I didn't understand this for a long time,